the hill country of Texas, this is One Radio Network. Pleasant good evening to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and you've got OneRadioNetwork.com, OneRadioNetwork.com. It's a Thursday evening, and from the beautiful hill country in Dripping Springs, Texas, we're live here tonight, November 6, 2008. And for those of you into health and nutrition, which is what we do mostly around here, and healing, you're in for a treat tonight because we have a gentleman who's been at this for quite a long time with a pretty varied background. He's up in Long Island, New York, and I think you'll be able to tell that even Rich Black has been in New York for a while. Rich Black, how are you?
Yes, how are you doing there?
I love that accent, man. That's great. Long Island, how long have you lived up there?
I've lived here my entire life.
Uh-huh. They just can't get you out of New York, huh?
No, not yet. Maybe someday in the near future, but for right now, this is still home.
Terrific. Rich Black, 25 years ago, you were doing like kung fu.
Yes, that's correct. That's how I started in the Eastern healing traditions and the Eastern arts. Part of Chinese kung fu is to also learn to heal in case you injure the opponent, and also simply part of the entire system itself. Medicine and acupressure, acupuncture is all intimately entwined with the arts itself. So,
well, that was pretty cutting edge in the early 80s, jumping into kung fu.
Yes. Hmm. Yes, definitely. Back then, when you were into herbs and practicing breathing and meditation, and if you talked to anybody about it, they gave you some strange looks. They looked at you like you were a little bit wacko and maybe took a half step away from you. So it was definitely one of the, you were a minority if you did it back then. And of course, in the early 90s, as various medical studies started to demonstrate the efficacy of various herbs, St. John's wort was one of the big ones, ginkgo biloba. It started to become more accepted, and then they started to look more at acupuncture and acupressure and said, wow, this actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And little by little, the Western medical establishment started to, give it a little more credence and validity.
Uh-huh. And you've dabbled in quite a bit of that we'll talk about tonight, acupuncture, acupressure mostly, and juicing and fasting and nutrition and meditation, breathing. And I'm kind of fascinated with the connection between the breathing, the martial arts, and healing. Let's talk a bit about that. You had a great article in naturalnews.com, and that's, you actually write for them as well.
Yes, I'm one of their contributing writers, correct.
Oh, that's terrific. And you were talking about this idea of deep breathing and it being like a second heart.
Correct.
Yeah, well, where'd you get this idea, and tell us a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, what happens is when you deep breathe, unfortunately in the West, everybody has kind of become a shallow upper chest breather due to a number of factors, whether it's sedentary lifestyle, lack of physical training of the body, the muscles begin to atrophy, whether it's excess weight, or really a combination of all of these. And so most people tend to breathe from the upper part of the chest. Mm-hmm. And the way that nature designed us to breathe is really from low down, from the lower abdomen, or as the Chinese term it, the dantian, which is about an inch and a half below the belly button, some say 2 inches, but that general area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you deep breathe from that area, you're filling the lungs from the bottom up. And as the lungs expand, it presses on the diaphragm, which is a thick muscle that sits below the lungs and basically separates the lungs from the rest of the abdominal cavity. So as the diaphragm expands down, it gently massages the internal organs, which benefits them. But also what this does is this compresses gently the internal organs and all the arteries where there's a massive amount of blood generally flowing around the midsection of the body. And this has a tremendous amount of dynamic force that pushes, very gently moves the blood around the body at a much greater rate and at a far with far greater ease than the heart itself can do. So this takes a tremendous load off of the heart.
Huh.
Right. This saves the heart from a lot of work. Again, you're moving a far greater amount of blood, even though breathing is much slower than the heart because so much more volume of blood is being moved. It actually ends up moving equal or more amounts of blood than the heart does at a resting rate. So this is one of the ways that you're saving a lot of strain on the heart, a lot of stress. And in Chinese medicine, they don't count your age by your chronological years. They actually count your age by the number of heartbeats. Because the more you wear out your heart and the more strain you place on it, that's going to have accelerate aging in the entire body of all of the systems of the body.
By your heartbeat, not necessarily, or is it like 40 heartbeats a minute, then you're chronologically 40 years old? It wouldn't be like that, would it?
Not necessarily that much of a one-to-one ratio, but just overall and basically the greater the strain you place on the heart, the more it's going to cause accelerated aging and deterioration of the rest of the body. Mainly because what happens is the more strain that's placed on the heart, the more yang or fire energy is built up in the body. And the more of this fire energy that's built up in the body, that's what causes the body to prematurely break down and age. So when you practice deep breathing, you're using, in the law of the five elements in Chinese medicine, the lungs are classified as metal, and the heart is the fire organ. So when you are deep breathing, you are strengthening, or if you can imagine, increasing the amount of metal, in Qigong terms, that the body can, of the heat from the heart that the body can absorb. So it's like adding more metal to, let's say, a car engine or something that generates heat. It's going to actually have a greater cooling effect on that engine, and the same thing happens with your heart. So the more you're strengthening the lungs, it's like adding metal to the lungs or the capacity of the lungs to absorb that heat energy, and that takes, again, a great load of this yang fire energy off the heart, and then you're purging the fire energy as you're breathing. So this cools down the overall fire energies of the body, which, again, helps to accelerate cell regeneration and helps the body to last a lot longer.
Really? So the more fire we have, we're kind of burning the body up a little bit?
Yes, it's pretty much exactly. If you think of it that way, the more it is on fire and the higher the temperature, then the more everything's going to break down. Again, we can look at it in terms of one of the examples I like to use is if anyone's familiar with astronomy, in space there are stars that burn so bright that they burn themselves out in only 10,000 years, whereas other stars burn cooler and they'll last anywhere from 10 to 20 billion years or 50 billion years, depending. So it's a very similar analogy that the Chinese discovered millennia ago, that people who, it's all discovered through empirical evidence and in just analysis, and they noticed that people who had too much fire energy, these are the people who had various chronic diseases that are associative of too much fire or yang energy in the body, which is exactly what we're seeing today, especially in the West, whereas many diseases are really diseases of excess fire energy. So this is one way that utilizing deep breathing can not only take a great strain off the heart, but in time it will begin to cool the fire energies of the body. And when the energies are in balance, both yin-yang balance and fire and water balance, which is a little different, then disease simply begins to vanish and symptoms disappear.
It's very interesting. Rich Black is our guest, and he started with Kung Fu 25 years ago. And as you can tell right off the bat, he seems to know what the heck he's talking about here. If you care to join us, please jump in, 888-663-6386, or you can email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. He has a great website called ChineseHealthFitness.com.
Right.
ChineseHealthFitness.com.
Chinese Health and Fitness, actually.
Oh, Health and Fitness. Sorry. Health. Is it spelled out A-N-D?
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Okay. A-N-D-Fitness.com. He's up in Long Island, New York. So this idea of the deep breathing, Rich, is it simply a matter of practicing just of give us some ideas of how we can learn how to do this more, because I'm sure whether or not some of us do yoga or whatever we do, that we could all do more breathing from what you call like the Dantian, or which is just below the navel, right?
Right, exactly.
How can we learn how to do more of this and use it more as a second heart?
Well, the basic excellent way that is taught And when someone's really getting into the more advanced meditations, which in Chinese Qigong definitely utilizes the Dantian, is you can simply practice anywhere from 20 to 30 breaths a day and being aware of the Dantian. And the more you put your mind down, wherever the mind goes, you concentrate, energy is automatically going to follow, and your thoughts and concentration are going to follow there too, of course. So you focus on the Dantian and simply being aware of the in and out movement. Now, this is what's called Buddhist breathing when you're doing this. When you breathe normally, and when you inhale, the lower abdomen will expand, and when you exhale, it will contract, as opposed to Taoist breathing, where they move the lower abdomen in reverse, and that's for different purposes. So you can simply do, let's say you pick a number like 30 breaths at a time per session, and just begin to sit in typically a cross-legged posture is preferable, as this helps to keep the torso more open and it increases the ability of it to expand. But what you can also do is sit on the edge of a chair. You sit sort of toward the edge of it and with the feet flat on the floor, and you can simply practice this about 30 breaths at a time is a good number. And as you practice it, like with anything, the more that you practice breathing lower down and expanding the diaphragm, which will occur automatically as you breathe lower down, eventually it'll start to become more and more habitual.
Now, when you say expanding the diaphragm, I'm kind of confused exactly where the diaphragm is. Is it just below the lungs?
Yeah, it's a thick muscle that separates. It's below the lungs and above the liver and the spleen, above the other organs. And this diaphragm, it's actually the most powerful individual muscle in the body. It's very thick and it's very flexible. And again, due to the chest breathing, this muscle has virtually atrophied in most people. It's not being used. So when you first practice deep breathing low down, sometimes there may be some slight discomfort some people notice after a few breaths, and that's because that muscle is actually beginning to expand. But if you just stick with it, usually in a relatively short time, within just a few sessions, that discomfort begins to go away, and you'll notice that breathing lower and lower becomes easier and easier, and it also becomes more natural as well.
Now, when you were doing that, I was trying to play with it while you were talking, and I was focusing more around my navel area. But are you suggesting, Rich, that it's actually up a little bit higher than that?
Well, no, the navel area is where you want to actually...
Okay, that's where you want to expand.
Right.
That's where you want to see raise up and focus on that as you take the breath in, right?
Right, exactly. So when you keep your mind down at the Dantian, the action of practicing this lower down breathing will automatically begin to expand the diaphragm. So it's not something consciously that we have to be concerned about. If you just focus on the lower Dantian and breathing more from the lower part of the lungs, filling your lungs from the bottom up, and you make this a regular practice, that will occur automatically.
And then we'll begin to breathe like that when we're writing or reading or walking or anything.
Exactly.
And that's what we want.
Right, exactly. That's what you want to do, and that's what's going to help to increase that blood flow throughout the body and, again, help take that strain off the heart, which with heart disease being one of the number one killers in the Western world today, this is something of a really a major concern, which is one of the reasons I wanted to bring out this aspect in the article.
Very, very nice. So it actually then takes the heat out of the heart.
Right. It begins to absorb the heat that the heart is working too hard at the same time as taking a load off it. So we're absorbing the excess fire energy, and we're giving it less, generating less fire energy at the same time due to the deep breathing action of the lungs.
Now, after all these years, do you, Rich Black, still practice, or have you gotten to the point where you're always kind of breathing in this way?
No, I'm always pretty much breathing low down. I mean, you can always, there is a natural tendency to come up a little bit, but I'm pretty much always breathing from the abdomen to some degree. Obviously, when I meditate or when I'm practicing various breathing exercises such as the 8 silk breathing, 8 pieces of brocade, or other deep breathing Qigong exercises, then there's more of a conscious focus on this, and the deep breathing, you increase the depth. You breathe more deeply, and you're going to breathe from more lower down when you're actually practicing a particular breathing exercise or during a session.
Uh-huh. And then how is this related to Qigong? We hear Qigong a lot. People who are into Qigong are really into it, and it's exciting work. Is there many different kinds of Qigong, much like in yoga?
Yes, there's a so many different exercises. And even the version of breathing I teach on the video, there's dozens of different varieties of it.
Oh, you have video on your website, too.
Right. The video is, it's about the video that I sell, which talks about all the major, I have five different aspects of Qigong and Chinese medicine on the video. There's a breathing section, there's a section on meditation, there's one on physical training, there's one on nutrition and supplementation, and then a section on acupressure, where I teach a dozen different points on there. And the breathing set that I, the first one that I learned is the version of the eight pieces of brocade. And this is a very old breathing form. It's over 900 years old. And this particular version is a softer type of this eight pieces of brocade, because there are other versions of it that are sort of harder, meaning that their focus is more on somewhat muscular tension or more of a concentrated, focused mind. And this tends to build up more of the fire energy, whereas the version that I teach was taught myself focuses more on, it's similar to Tai Chi in that the movements are coordinated deeply with the breath, with deep breathing, and the simple movements are easier to learn. So this builds up a tremendous amount of energy in the body, where the Dantian is kind of like the storehouse, the battery of the body, where Qi begins in the body. And this set takes about 15 minutes to perform, 15 to 20 minutes, and it really begins to recharge the energy. It has cooling aspects that I talked about, cooling the fire down. And it's another great way to get you into that regular habit of practicing deep breathing.
Huh. Is one of our goals with breathing to breathe longer and lower and deeper, so then our heart rate will gradually go down?
Yes.
That's the idea.
Yeah, that's one of the, there are really multiple reasons for it, but that is one of the main things you want to, and again, in relation to the heart itself, cooling the fire down, increasing the blood flow throughout the body. And when we practice in deep breathing, we're taking more of the chi from the air, more of the ionic energy that is in the air, and this is going to increase that overall, again, the battery charge here in the Dantian. And when your energy is stronger throughout the body, all the cells in the body have an electromagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And the more powerful is the bile voltage, let's call it, or the more more powerful is the chi flow, the greater is the cell regeneration going to be. Each cell is going to be far more capable of defending itself against the invasion from bacteria, viruses, et cetera. The cells are going to, if there are tumors or cancerous cells, this is one of the major ways that breathing and deep breathing exercises help to eventually overcome cancer as well, which there are so many documented cases of this in China that you could literally spend decades, counting them all. There's just millions and millions of stories of people in China and throughout the world using deep breathing exercises to cure virtually every disease out.
Hmm. And it doesn't need to be more than just practicing deep breathing without a lot of complicated techniques.
No, it doesn't have to be complicated. The techniques of Qigong really were designed for the masses. They were designed for people to learn easily, especially medical Qigong. There are different categories of Qigong. There's martial Qigong, martial art Qigong. There's religious Qigong, which is used in various monasteries, and the monks use them. There is the medical Qigong.
Excuse me a second. What was the motives then of the monks to use them?
Well, the monks' motive was to help to, again, for longevity purposes, because the more they could, longer they lived, the longer they could meditate and they had a greater chance of reaching enlightenment. There was also the idea of calming down the mind so that they could control their thoughts better, and they could, again, attain that peaceful state, which breathing definitely begins to lead you into that peaceful, calm, tranquil state, which is, again, critical for achieving enlightenment. And there were very specific practices that they also discovered in their attempts to attain enlightenment. They would do breathing exercises where they would lead energy from the legs up through what's called the thrusting vessel, which goes right through the spine and directly up into the brain. And by leading energy on a daily basis up to the brain, their brains became more and more calm and more at one with the universe itself and with basically the energy fields of the universe.
Wow.
This has enabled them to understand the deeper aspects of it, and eventually enabled them to overcome all their emotions, all their fears, fears of death, and you could just really see things completely clearly, the future, the past, and understand all the problems of human suffering, which was the main, it's really one of the main focuses of Buddhism, especially the advanced Buddhism with the spiritual practices, was to see where we were going, where we're coming from, but also to control the mind and get rid of the emotions that lead to so many problems, whether anger, excess fear, jealousy, worry, and all these various emotions that they discovered through observation that were really the source of so many problems, wars and personal problems, and all these emotions were really kept people and held them back. And that's one of the reasons they retreated to the monasteries, was to have that tranquility and then practice these techniques so that they could, again, attain complete calmness of mind, a complete perfection. And from a martial arts standpoint, the Shaolin monks, they would simply focus on their training. And again, there's a lot of crossover. A lot of times when you practice a particular breathing set or a Qigong set for enlightenment, it also is going to make your body very physically strong, and it's going to be useful for increasing your martial arts skills all at the same time. So it's kind of difficult sometimes to really categorize one breathing strictly as for a medical purpose or for a martial art purpose, because martial artists were also in tremendously had tremendous physical health and had tremendous immunity and also lived very long lives. So,
oh, that's really interesting. And they, Rich, they were actually, you were suggesting they were working to take the chi or the energy up all the way from their legs all the way up to their brains, like, and then they would work bringing it up. Is that anything to do with the Kundalini, or is that a separate thing?
It's probably very similar. I'm not too familiar with that exactly, but I know in Qigong, you're taking the energy from the legs, the particular vessels on the inner part of the thigh, for a couple of reasons. One was not only to lead that excess chi there, but two, they found that when they led the chi from the inner thighs and those vessels there up the spine and into the brain, this actually is how they control their sexual desire. So when you did, and I practiced it myself, and it's pretty amazing how it works, you would actually feel that when you did it, it would actually disappear for that period of time until more energy was built up. And by moving the energy from those vessels, it also encouraged more energy to be generated, more sexual energy would be generated. And in the body, sexual energy is actually the most potent and powerful of the four main types of chi that are in the body.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. That's always fun. You know, you can't go wrong with sex. So let's see. Let's go back and talk about that. So you're talking about from the inner thighs, the chi, and this is where, Rich, the sexual energy is kind of the starting spot of it, or the storage?
Correct, exactly. The main vessels that flow down the legs are where a lot of sexual energy is stored in the body.
Interesting.
So that's why it's kind of common among professional athletes, and boxers in particular comes into mind. Their coaches would regularly tell them to have no emissions, no seminal emissions, for 2 to 3 days before a bout.
Sure, we've heard that a lot over the years about all-stars and stuff, and I like to do this for a big game, not, you know, right?
Right, exactly. And that's the main reason why, because they discovered, even though they didn't maybe understand necessarily about the qi per se or qigong theory, they did know, again, through empirical evidence, that whenever that happened, the legs were weaker. And if you're, again, a football player or a boxer, you definitely want to have those legs stay very strong.
Yeah.
And the Chinese realized this, too. So by moving the qi from those particular meridians up to the spine into the brain, and this is a very advanced thing to do. Usually you wouldn't learn this to at least 10 years of regular training under a Shaolin monk or under a qualified master, because it can be tricky. You do have to have solid control of the qi and the breathing, I just want to say. But as far as theoretically, you're moving that qi up, and then as those vessels are depleted, the body senses the depletion in qi in those vessels. It then generates more sexual energy from the adrenal glands above the kidneys and from the liver and from the other major organs. More qi is then converted back into sexual energy, and the process continues.
So without any loss of seminal fluid, so it's kind of a building thing rather than a depletion.
Right, exactly. Exactly. You're not depleting it. And in martial arts, like any time somebody was going to get into Qigong, the more advanced internal aspects of the martial arts, the instructors would always tell them it was no sex for at least the first 100 days Typically, the first 180 days, they would always encourage them no sex at all until they built the foundation.
Really?
And so they would build up a tremendous amount of chi in the body through breathing exercises, repeated physical training that went along with it, as well as attention to diet. There would also be certain herbal formulas that they would take to, again, greatly build up even more energy. And this energy was used to practice particular martial techniques to build these things up to tremendous levels of power. If anyone's familiar with, you know, the classic kung fu movies that were on Channel 5 years ago or, you know, the older ones, you would often see somebody who had one particular technique, a punch or a kick, or maybe it was iron forearm or a grip or whatever it was that had tremendous destructive power. And that is a disciplined technique. And that was one of the ways they attained that, was through the proper use of the sexual energy in the body and the other energies as well.
Well, that's really fascinating. That's kind of great fun. Rich Stacel is our guest, S-T-A-C-E-L, and his website is ChineseHealthAndFitness.com. So you say you have different CDs. One of the ways that you earn your living is you sell these CDs, and you teach some of the breathing and other things.
Right, correct.
That's fine.
I sell the DVDs through the website, and I do some personal instruction as well, and some phone counseling, also phone consultations, whether it be for health purposes or even martial art purposes, whatever, any of the topics that I touch upon, I'm certainly always happy to talk about and share. And, you know, that's the thing, because with the martial arts and with Qigong in particular and Chinese Kung Fu, classic Chinese Kung Fu, you're learning these things for the martial arts, but there are so many tremendous health benefits to it that, you know, you automatically start to get into the Qi aspects. And I've read so many books and what I've learned from my instructors in my own years of practice that I wanted to make a video to bring these tremendous gifts that I've gotten and many people have gotten, these tremendous techniques that people know about but don't really, you know, a lot of times they think it's too complicated to learn. And so I made the video to really break it down to simplicity so that the average person can just pop this into the DVD player and do this breathing. I take everyone through it step by step. And whether you're interested more in meditation, whether you're interested in physical working out, whatever it happens to be. So it's an excellent door. It's an excellent beginning video and even intermediate to get someone into the door of Chinese health and true health and fitness. And nothing is hard. Even the physical working out, 15 to 20 minutes a few times a week, is all it requires. No weights required, no complicated machines, nothing of that nature.
Oh, that's fun,
really,
yeah.
It's really all that's required to really maintain your health. You know?
Well, I want to give me one. It'll be fun. I think it'd be a great thing to do because it's so interesting, Rich, in the Western culture, and I don't know how it is in Europe or places like that, but certainly here, I mean, nobody talks about that, breathing and this kind of stuff, do they? I mean, all we do, we learn how to get scared, and the next thing you know, we're going like this, you know, all just getting just whacked out.
Exactly. You know, and that's why a lot of my articles I try to focus on the breathing, because it's one of the simplest things that people can do. And, you know, sometimes Western medicine touches upon it about you see a study come out here and there about breathing, but they're certainly not going to teach it from as a health modality or healing modality because it's something so simple and cheap, and obviously all they want to do is sell drugs and surgery, which make them tons of money. So these things are a direct threat to their profits and, you know, to their control and stranglehold over health and healing. And, of course, myself and many other people out there, my goal is to get this simple knowledge that is so unbelievably effective that people really don't know how effective it is until you do it. And, of course, it does require commitment. It requires regularity, but it's not difficult, and it's something that anybody can learn to make into a regular part of their habit in their daily life. You know, 15 minutes a day, 4 or 5 days a week, just as a regular maintenance. And I have a new gentleman who actually I was doing some other consulting work for, and he purchased a copy of the video because he some weight loss techniques. He knocked off about 40 pounds in the last several months, and he got a video. And just doing it, he did the breathing about 4 times, and he called me up, and he's in shock because he lifts a lot of heavy things for a living. He's a truck driver, lifts a lot of heavy metal, almost like oxygen cylinders, regularly all day long. So his shoulder was hurting, in which he was going to a chiropractor for, and he had carpal tunnels. And he told me, he says, I did the breathing, and the third time I started to feel, just like you talked about, I felt my my forearms tingling. And at first I was a little concerned, but then I remembered you said, oh, that there's that's going to be the energy going to the point of damage to actually heal it. I said, that's exactly right. He goes, and now, he goes, look at this. I'm moving my hands about a week later, and his hands are no longer bothering him. And he told his chiropractor he won't be needing any more treatments on his shoulder because the shoulder's no longer hurting him either. And I said, that's a simple example right there, and he's just blown away by it. And I said, that's a simple example of how when you take in more energy into the body, again, it's going to increase the electromagnetic voltage, so to speak, of all the cells. It's going to increase cell regeneration, and then the body is simply going to repair itself.
And we're taking more energy in, Rich Stassel, just from focusing and focusing on the breath and doing it more deeply from down lower, with the idea that we are bringing more energy, and just and also having that idea that, that this is what we're doing, that helps as well?
Yes. If you concentrate on it, you can literally will more energy to come in as you're practicing the breathing.
That's great.
The breathing itself is going to take in more energy because as you're taking in more oxygen, the ionic energy is mixed in with the air. So more energy is going to come in naturally. That's going to be and automatically be stored in the Dantian. But when you practice the physical movements, such as a breathing, such as eight pieces of brocade or five animals play, whatever the particular Qigong set is, which coordinates movements with the breathing, similar to Tai Chi, then you're going to take in two or three times more energy than you would do just with deep breathing alone.
Really, when you do coordinated movements, because you're focusing on the movements and the breath, and you're just more conscious?
Yes, there's more consciousness there, but they discover that as you're moving in coordination with the breath, again, the meridians that are going down the arms and the legs and the various parts of the body, that energy is encouraged to flow more. And as the energy flows, and just like I mentioned before, when the vessels are, the body senses a decrease in certain vessels, more energy is automatically converted, let's say from the adrenal glands, for example. The same thing happens with the breath. More energy, automatically the body pulls in more to make up for the loss.
Do you generally, in your practice, focus on more nostril breathing as we do, like, in more the yogic traditions, or do you breathe through the mouth sometimes?
Typically in the nose and out the mouth. So it's very similar. A lot of Qigong and yoga share many similarities, which, of course, because, you know, the proximity of India to China, there's a lot of cultural exchange that occurred. So there was always the sharing back and forth of various knowledge between the two cultures for thousands of years. Definitely a lot of similarities. And, yes, in the nose and out the mouth is typically the best thing because the nose has to – it warms the air if you're outside. And then the nose itself is a very effective extractor of chi from the air. And one of the things with breathing in – nose is that when you breathe through the nose, the energy is going directly up into the brain, more directly than if you're just breathing through the mouth. Otherwise, it has to go from the lungs through the body up to the brain.
Can Rich Stassel, can we use breathing techniques to actually get stronger and build muscle?
I'm sorry, Pete.
Patrick.
Patrick, I'm sorry, we got cut off for a second. Can we use what?
Can we use these breathing techniques to get stronger, to build muscle?
Yes. When they're used with other coordinated exercises, such as tension exercises, which in some of the other martial arts, they utilize those, the dynamic tension, they call that. Mm-hmm. You can certainly use breathing exercises with tension to, again, build up more energy, get the energy to flow throughout the body more readily. And as you mentioned, through the tension and the extra chi, you can definitely build muscle.
Are we breathing out when we're, say, lifting or doing, say, a pull-up or a push-up? When we're doing the resistance part, the hard part, are we always going out?
You can do...
Does it matter?
Yeah, typically is breathing out on the power stroke is generally what's done to get the chi there. But if you ever notice anybody who's practicing, like, again, a bodybuilder lifting a very, very heavy weight, one thing that they'll do when they're actually on the extension, when they're actually trying to push up, is hold their breath.
I've heard that, yeah.
Right.
They actually hold
holding,
it.
Yeah, breath holding is actually another advanced technique to really get the chi into the muscles or into a certain part of the body, and you hold the chi there. And this can actually be used for, as you mentioned, building muscle, building strength, and even healing as well.
Yeah, I believe this fellow, I'm spacing out his name now. I think he's Green Door Publications. He's the kettleball guy.
Okay.
Do you know who I mean? This Russian guy, kettleball. I forget his name. He's got a really eclectic kind of sounding name, but he's the first person I read, Rich Stossel, where he actually talks about holding the breath, because oftentimes I grew up playing around with this kind of stuff. They always told you not to do it. It was dangerous, you know, to hold the breath.
Right, exactly. And I guess those warnings probably a lot of it came from that if you're really lifting several hundred pounds, mm-hmm. you're holding the breath, they might be concerned about possibly some kind of a blood vessel rupture or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I had heard as well years ago as you did. But really, when you're practicing holding the breath, and if you're doing it with lighter weights, it's certainly a lot safer. But again, you know, Russia also, because of the proximity to China, they have actually a lot of Chinese medical knowledge mixed in with a lot of their training philosophies as well. So that's why, again, this gentleman is talking about practicing holding the breath at certain times or on the power stroke as well. And if you think about it, if you can try an example. You can actually try and take a deep breath, and if you make your mouth very small, as if you're trying to blow out a candle from, let's say, you know, 10 feet away, you'll discover that when you do this and you breathe out, there'll be actually an expansion of the abdominal muscles in the dantian. And this expansion, the muscles tense up and they actually hold, and that's to help get that breath out and help get the power out. And this is something that the Taoists learned, because the Taoists are more concerned about getting qi and projecting qi further for different reasons. So they do a reverse breathing, and they would also practice some of this breath holding as well.
Oh, his name just came to me. I believe it's Pavel Satsolin,
okay.
And maybe Dragon Door, not Green Door, Dragon Door Publications.
Okay.
And he's got a whole bunch of different books and authors, and pretty interesting stuff. He uses these kettleballs. Now, do you lift, do you do resistance training too with all the other stuff you do, Rich?
Only a little bit. Sometimes I'll do some once or twice a week. Maybe I might just grab the weights and do a little bit. But mostly it's really just all natural body weight stuff, whether it be push-ups, pull-ups, various no-weight exercises, just utilizing the weight of the arms and legs. I found that I've gotten stronger just utilizing those with very high reps than I do whenever I use, you know, dumbbells or the barbell or anything along those lines.
Well, you sure look strong on your pictures. So you don't really mess with weights very much. You can actually just use the body weight and breathing, and you're getting stronger.
Exactly, absolutely. When I would train with my oldest brother was a bodybuilder for many years, and he was pretty good size as well. And probably like a Jean-Claude Van Damme build, he got just all natural. And when we would get into some of the fighting, more serious fighting and grappling, he was always surprised at the strength, even though he knew that he worked out and I didn't. And when I would grapple him, there were a couple of times he got kind of annoyed because he couldn't get away. And instead of utilizing the escape techniques I showed him, he decided to get into a struggling match with me. And he struggled and held his breath for all he could, and I was still very relaxed. And he couldn't escape. He couldn't get away. And finally, exhausted, he says, "How in the heck are you so strong?" And I said, "Ancient Chinese secret" is kind of what I joke with him. I quip with him. But really, it was just doing these natural types of body weight exercises, performing them hundreds of reps, which I show several of these on the video as well, and previews on the website and so forth. And when I teach people, you're not only building up a lot of muscular strength and tendon strength, which is something a lot of people don't know about, but again, you're building up tremendous amounts of qi, so that we're not draining qi that we get from breathing and meditation. We're further using our body to build up more and building up true strength, and we're going to actually get ourselves in shape as well.
So you're doing lots of reps.
Lots of reps, very high reps. Sometimes anywhere from, you know, from 100 to 300 reps you're doing, just utilizing your own arm weight or leg weight, whatever it is.
And what kind of a exercise would you do a couple hundred times?
Well, a very simple one is something called arm swinging. It's also known as the windmill, where you can just start off with your arms straight and you just practice swinging them in reverse, almost as if you're doing a backstroke.
Oh, you mean so you got them straight out in front of you?
Right. Keep the arms straight and just do, with both of them together, just start swinging them reverse as if you're doing a backstroke.
I'm doing it now. I'm trying to, so it's just like a big backstroke with it straight up in the air, got kind of a vertical to your body,
right.
to the ground, right?
Right, exactly. You do it in a standing position, and you're just doing that. You can start off anywhere from 100 times, and then when you're done going reverse, then you go forward.
Wow.
And this is going to work the chest muscles. It works the chest, the shoulder, the back, the arms, biceps, triceps. And what happens is blood is going to be moved into the fingertips through the centrifugal motion of swinging the arms at a fairly moderate pace. So, again, more blood goes to the fingertips, and in the hands there are dozens of vital points. All of the main meridians terminate in the fingertips. So the more blood we get, the more qi we're going to get going to the hands, and then, again, that's going to benefit those particular organ energy systems as well, and, again, encourage regeneration and strengthening of all of the organs at the same time.
Wow. And give us one for the lower body that you can do without weights.
An excellent one for the lower body that I teach people typically is the horse stance, the basic horse stance, again, from martial arts. And this is one where you're taking about a two-shoulder-width step to your right or to your left, and you pull the hips back, and you point the knees outward to the side. And you just simply go down as low as you can, keeping the back straight, and you hold this position. You can either do horse stance squats with it, coming up and down 20 or 30 times, or you can simply do a static hold. Try and do it for a minute, anywhere from 1 minute and working up to 5 minutes. And this will burn a lot of calories. There are a lot of people who begin to really lose weight doing these types of movements. And you're strengthening the ankles, the knees, and the hips, because when you practice holding as opposed to movement, you are strengthening tendons. And when you strengthen tendons, it's a different type of strength, and you're also strengthening the joints as well, more importantly. I've had people who had bad ankles and bad knees just practicing this a very simple stance like this, or an alternative version of the stance where it's instead of a two-shoulder-width position, you're in a one-shoulder-width position, and you bend the knees maybe 20 or 30 degrees, and you drop down several inches. And just holding this position for several minutes at a time, knees and ankles no longer bother them. The knees have been completely healed again because we're leading qi there. We're building up a lot of energy throughout all the meridians in the legs, and the liver, spleen, and kidneys in particular, those meridians are in flow down the legs. So when those meridians get filled with energy, the organs are going to regenerate at a higher level, and their function is going to be increased.
Oh, that's fun. Here's our phone number if you care to join us. A lot of you out there tonight are awfully quiet, but that's okay. You're just listening, obviously. 888-663-6386, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. If you care to join us, we have about 20 or so left, 15 to 20. Rich Stassel, S-T-A-C-E-L, ChineseHealthAndFitness.com. And a lot of great stuff on the site. So, Rich, over the years, let's talk a bit about the food. What kind of journey have you taken with your diet and nutrition, and the different effects your diet has had on your practice and your strength in your life?
Oh, that's a very broad topic, of course, and very important one. So, for myself, growing up, my diet was terrible growing up, and as I got older and got more into really starting off and getting into the herbs, the healing herbs, into the martial arts 25 years ago, I then started to delve little by little more and more into nutrition. And especially in the last 10 years, I've really focused a tremendous amount on that, because this is particularly important at the higher levels of Qigong cultivation, where you're really getting into the advanced meditations. You really want to make sure the body is as pure as possible, which means getting into organic food. It means avoiding chemicals as much as possible, eating much more raw food than live foods. Juicing is something I definitely advocate a tremendous amount, and that's something that I do on a regular basis. You really want to get as much of those true whole food nutrients into the body as you possibly can, as well as even something even more important that is just now starting to become more well-known, and that's enzymes.
Mm.
Enzymes are absolutely critical because every function in your body requires enzymes. Your cells have about 100,000 reactions per second that occur in any one of your cells. So these all require enzymes for these functions, these biological processes to take place. So the more enzymes we have, which we get from fresh, raw, live foods, as little processed and as little cooked as possible, lightly steamed vegetables, for example, and again, juicing, we're getting tremendous amounts of these enzymes flooding into the system. And this is going to have just a tremendous amount of benefits because, again, without enzymes, then you basically you have no life.
Do you utilize any of the supplemental forms of systemic enzymes?
Yes, I do. I use a lot of your complete enzymes. Dr. Howell has his own line of enzymes, and there are many others out there. Try to get those in the plant-based enzymes is the main things you want to get. Papaya enzymes are very popular, but they only digest one or two of the main types of the macronutrients. So you really want to have a broad-spectrum enzyme, at least with amylase, lipase, cellulase, and protease, so that you can absorb your and digest your corresponding carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. But again, the more broad spectrum that you have, the better it is. And I take enzymes with every meal. If I do eat out, I have a little pack I keep in the car, and I bring that with me into the restaurant, and all my friends and family, they all know, pass the enzymes around so that we have as much digestive enzymes as possible, and we save a tremendous load. We take a tremendous load off of our pancreas in particular, since the pancreas is so overworked in the modern society today. Everybody's eating denatured processed foods, which is the food itself is enzyme dead, which means your body has no choice but to utilize its own enzymes and make enzymes to digest the food. And this is actually one of the causes of type 2 diabetes today, why it's exploding, because with all the processed foods and people not living healthy lifestyles, not being as active as they need to be, which being active also generates more enzymes, the pancreas is so overworked that it simply cannot keep up with the demand to process all these chemicals and these dead foods, these nutrient and enzyme-dead foods, especially some chemicals like hydrogenated oil, which I had an article recently on that and the importance of that, why it has to be avoided at all costs, because hydrogenated oil takes such a tremendous amount of enzymes to digest, which the body really doesn't even fully digest it, and that just causes a whole host of problems within the cell wall and mutation of cells, and then, of course, that can lead to cancer and a whole bunch of other health issues.
I think there's certainly pretty much a given these days. We're beginning to really know that with cooked foods, we really do need to supplement, don't we, some enzymes?
Yes, definitely.
Eating cooked foods.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You got it right, because cooking – of course, destroys all the any natural enzymes that are in the food. That's one thing that destroys it. The fact that food is not fresh, you know, it really creates a catch-22 and a real big problem, because the way food is eaten today, you know, we get our food from thousands of miles away, which it's not fresh, and even the fact that it's several days old, a lot of the enzymatic activity has been lost. Then we have to cook that now to make sure we don't get any influx of bacteria, salmonella, or a large amount of E. coli. So we're further destroying in the enzymatic activity, and we're changing the molecular structure of the meat itself a lot of times into poisons that further create a great strain on the immune system of the body. And so now, again, the body has to make its own enzymes to digest these processed and packaged foods and foods that are not raw and fresh with all their live enzymes and life force inherent within the food.
In all of your heavy exercise and Qigong and things and Gung Fu, do you require any kind of dairy animal foods at all? Do you indulge in that?
I do have – I follow more of the Taoist diet, and the Taoists, because they actually are one of the longest-lived groups on the planet.
They are? Really?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was said in Taoist society, if you died at 120, you died young.
Really?
And there are many Taoists –
you gotta love that, boy.
Yeah. There are many Taoists that live to be well into the upper 100 levels. Even close to 200 years old.
Really? Now, the Taoists, I've read some books on Taoism and Dr. Steve Chang and things. What period of time and where was this very prevalent, the Taoist tradition?
Yeah, absolutely. The Taoists really all throughout the history of China. One of the main three religions of China being Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
And the Taoists, though, were probably the most practical and the one that most people adopted, because the Taoists, unlike the Buddhists and Shaolin, the Taoists were very believed in that a Taoist monk could have sex, number one, which is...
Yeah, the Taoists really had a good thing going with the sexual energy, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely.
These guys, that's why I got more attracted to that one.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why most common people would, because of the dual cultivation methods of enhancing sexual energy between male and female and between partners. That's absolutely critical.
Uh-huh.
And they were very scientific in their approach to discovering herbs and to focusing on the health and longevity and to diet. Now, the reason originally that they got into herbs so much was because they were really looking for the elixir of life and something to aid them in their quest to live a very long time, very long life, and for immortality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, immortality doesn't necessarily mean literally living forever. It means to have a very long life so that they could have that much more time to practice enlightenment and achieve enlightenment.
Yeah, to kind of get it together, as we say, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So in studying herbs, they also went through a period where they studied chemical medicines, and they came up with various chemical mineral formulas, and they did about between 4 BC to about 1 AD, and it was basically declared to be a complete failure, which now Western medicine is, of course, all about drugs, and the Chinese tried this over 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the Taoists in particular, they knew that it was basically a complete failure. So from there, they got into herbs, and they discovered that, you know, moderate use of meats, whether it be chicken, fish, and fish in particular, they were very big on. They did eat some turkey and some chicken and some other meats. They tended to avoid red meat because, again, it builds up too much fire energy in the body. And then through the use of, again, the dual cultivation sexual methods and other more advanced meditations, you know, this is one of the ways that they lived to be, you know, again, have tremendous lifespan, tremendously strong, and they live to have, you know, be very sexually active, even right up until the day of their death, even.
So it was meat and dairies, but sparingly?
Yeah, sparingly. A couple of times a week, they would have some of the fish or some of the chicken, and, you know, all organic, fresh, raw, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vegetables, a lot of fruits and vegetables. Fasting on a regular basis was also very important, as well as various herbal formulas that were passed down. And there's one of the oldest lived gentlemen in China was Li Qingyun, and he died in 1933. And according to his birth records, he was born in 1677.
1677?
Right, 256 years old when he died in 1933.
Wow.
Yeah, and some of the he had he had 14 wives, 70 children, and a whole bunch of other grandchildren.
You gotta love that, man.
Yeah, exactly. And he was also a Qigong master. He was a martial arts expert, and he never advocated any exercise that tires, along as do many other Qigong masters, long-lived Qigong masters, never advocated that type of exercise, like in the West, where you're huffing and puffing and exhausted. He also took several herbs that on a regular basis, including Hoshu Wu and Ginseng herb, were two of the main herbs, as well as some other herbs of the pennywort family, to aid in the longevity and the health process.
Yeah, we hear a lot about Hoshu Wu, our fellow that we have on from time to time, David Wolf.
Yes.
He's really big on Hoshu Wu, and, of course, ginseng from, gosh, time immemorial. I mean, you just really can't go wrong with ginseng, can you?
No, not at all. It's one of those considered cure-all herbs. It also has adaptogenic properties. So if you're too much fire energy, it'll make you cooler. If you're too cool, it'll help warm you up. And but it is classified as a warming tonic herb. So, again, especially as you get older, the fires of the body, the fire energy tends to diminish, and this helps to make sure that those fire energies are there at a proper level, not too much and not too little.
Oh, it'll actually balance it out. The ginseng won't heat you up too much.
Not generally, no. If you're not, you know, there are ones that are more potent, but typically, again, some of the longest lived people, they will take it on a regular basis as, you know, it's just part of their.
Just like every day.
Yeah, every day, absolutely. That and Hoshu Wu and a bunch of others that will be taken on a regular basis, various formulas passed down through the millennia.
Do you have any really favorite books with the from the Taoist on this the herbs and the nutrition that people might want to look into and
sure,
that you can recommend?
Yeah, definitely. Probably the number one book that if I had to, I always tell people if I only had one book that I could keep with me the rest of my life, it would be The Tao of Health, Sex, and Longevity by Daniel Reed.
The Tao of Health, Sex, and Longevity.
Right.
Gotta love that one, right?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people.
He's got my attention, all right?
Okay. Yeah, they like the title, exactly.
And Daniel Reed.
Daniel Reed, he's a fantastic traditional Chinese medical author. He actually lives in Taiwan. He's American, but he writes for a Western audience.
Huh.
I should say he's a Westerner, and he writes for a Western audience, and he takes the complicated Eastern things and really breaks them down into simplicity for specifically a Western audience.
And how are we spelling his last name?
It's R-E-I-D, I believe.
R-E-I-D.
Let's double check that here.
Daniel Reed.
Yes, R-E-I-D, Daniel Reed.
Uh-huh.
So that's probably the best single book. It's really the introduction to getting into all aspects. It'll touch upon nutrition and the meditation and the breathing and the sexual techniques. and everything else, and kind of like a companion book to it. It's kind of another book of his that's like an expansion, is The Complete Book of Chinese Health and Healing, and that's also, again, by Daniel Reed, and that really goes into much more into specifics on vitamins, nutrition. He gives sample regimens in there on that you can kind of make up your own exercise regimens as well, and it goes into tremendous detail. But again, his writing is absolutely fantastic. He lives in Taiwan. He learns from some of the old masters right there. And so he's been doing it himself about 35 years now.
Well, maybe that'd be a fellow we can track down and get on sometime. That'd be a trip. Daniel
Reed.
Yeah,
he would definitely be one, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of The Tao of Sexology and the Book of Eternal Exercises, Stephen Chang?
No, I don't believe
those are really cool. I'd recommend those. You might check that out sometime, Richard. Stephen Chang and The Tao of Sexology, and also the Book of Internal Exercises. And these are similar kind of things which I think you would enjoy, where they're just simple body exercises that you can do, that you can strengthen different organs of the body, the kidney, the liver, and they have all kinds of fun things for sexuality, the deer exercise. Really fun. And it just makes sense, you know, Rich, when you read it and you go, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense to me. You know?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's Stephen Chang, right?
Stephen Chang, yeah. And okay. We had him on the show years ago, but he's kind of retired now. I think he's well over 100, but he's he's an interesting man. And I like all the herbal things. Have you learned a lot about herbs, and do you play with them much now in your life?
I started off in herbology when I first began my training. It was one of the things I really got into for several years. But as I got more into the focus on diet and specifically in the Qigong and the meditation, I found that the need for herbs specifically decreased. So I started to really focus on other things, acupressure, really in the goal to really help people heal and to get them get their health back. Herbs are still definitely very important. I do talk about one of the herbs I take on a regular basis, and I love to make tea in it regularly, which I just had tonight, is burdock root tea.
Burdock root, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best, most potent blood purifiers and blood cleansers that there is. That's one I definitely recommend, as opposed to the hoshu, as we talked about, and ginseng definitely would be very powerful herbs. Schizandra is another powerful adaptogenic herb that's also very good to get on a regular basis. Too.
Is hoshu a big kidney builder for kidney qi and things?
Yes, it would have a lot of effects along with the ginseng, focusing on the sexual energies and the overall potency. It's one of the herbs that's also used for sexual dysfunction as well as again, overall immune boosting and health boosting.
Hoshu Wu.
Hoshu Wu, yes. Hoshu Wu is one of those longevity herbs, again, that the longest-lived Taoists use on a regular basis.
Now, what's the other word? Is it Fo Ti? Is that the same thing?
Yes, Fo Ti Tiang, exactly.
Fo Ti Tiang, is that the same thing, Richard?
Yes.
It's Hoshu Wu. But it is an adaptogenic or a tonic where we can take it quite long and regularly?
Yeah, it's a tonic. It's more of a tonic health-building herb. Schizandra is an adaptogenic, and I don't know if ginseng is it's officially classified as an adaptogenic, but I do know it has balancing effects on the overall qi itself, again, boosting the overall health. But Schizandra is an adaptogenic herb. Burdock root is a blood purifier. And Hoshu Wu is kind of like it's very similar to ginseng, but even more powerful.
Hmm.
Again, as long as you're getting it in its pure form and it's properly grown and cultivated well, then it's going to have very powerful effects. So really, the two are kind of like two sides of a coin, those two.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, isn't it, Rich Stassel, that the more you dabble around, and I've just done a bit over my life with the far Eastern kind of modality of what great importance and reverence they give for the kidneys, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that
absolutely
interesting?
Yeah, the kidneys are a critical organ, as I definitely stress when I talk to people who are trying to recover their health. Any chronic illness that is really gets to a sufficient level of severity is going to have it's going to be rooted in the kidneys to some degree. So they are your main organ for health, for longevity, because when the qi in those organs is strong, it's going to have an effect on every other organ in the body, especially the five main yin organs of the heart, liver, lungs, spleen, and the kidneys themselves. And the kidneys are water organs, and they are controlling of the water qi throughout the body, which is why when the kidneys are strong, they keep the heart fire in control, and mm-hmm. they prevent the hot fire from flaring up. So this is what help with heart disease. And again, when we cool that fire energy of the body, most diseases that people in the West are getting today are diseases of excess fire energy.
Well, what's your general feeling on water amounts? Do you have any guidelines, rule of thumbs that you talk to your people about of how much water?
Yeah, it can vary depending on the person, the size of the person. Generally, anywhere from, I'd say, half a gallon is probably a minimum on a daily basis.
Really?
Sometimes up to a gallon and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Depending, obviously, you don't want to go too much, because sometimes if you go too much, you can actually decrease the amount of salinity in the blood,
and
this can cause other issues. But one of the best ways with water is to pay attention to the color of your urine. If your urine is clear and white, then you've drinking probably just enough or maybe a little too much. It should be just a light yellow color. If it's a dark color, then you need to have.
You definitely have. Yeah, and that's been a pretty good, I think, good rule of thumb, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that seems to be. Well, Richard, it was a joy to have you on. I really enjoyed it. And I'll shoot you up a link to this. I'll get it on the air tomorrow. It'd be an honor to be on your website, and folks can go on your website and click on. And we'll put a hot link there right underneath your picture and the podcast to ChineseHealthAndFitness.com, and folks will find you from our website and we'll support one another. And once again, now you have different CDs on breathing, exercises, and all kinds of things on your website, huh?
I have a lot of articles on there. I have the one main DVD, which is the mother of all of them. I do have others I'm currently working on. There are going to be more coming out soon.
Well, Rich, you have a very pleasant evening in Long Island, and thanks for spending some time with us here. Really appreciate
Patrick,
it.
Patrick, thank you very much.
Been a joy. Thank you. Rich Stossel, that's good stuff, huh? He's got me psyched up about playing around with some breathing things. That'll be good. Breathing is always good. We had quite an interesting conversation with Rob Kirby today on the economy. He's our man in Canada who this is the second time. We really get into J.P. Morgan, the big daddy of them all. So that interview will be up in the morning. Also, in the morning will be our latest Andrew Goss interview we did last night. So that's three, and then Riches will be up. And then also How to Be Free in an Unfree World Election Day show will be up in the morning. So that'll be four brand new shows up for your listening and dancing pleasure on OneRadioNetwork.com. My favorite night of the week, Friday night. Tomorrow we do Open Friday Forum or Open Phone Friday. We'll talk to everybody, anybody, and just about anything. We'll see you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Patrick Timpone. Take care of yourself. Know the source.